WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia. The following programming is sponsored by Factorum Business Solutions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Our show looks at major issues impacting the nation and region from a bipartisan perspective. We want to hear from you, our listeners. Call in, join the conversation. Our call-in number is 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Our phone lines are now open. You can also send us your comments via social media. On X, we are at Tone and Tenor. On Instagram, our handle is at Tone and Tenor Radio. You can also like us on our Facebook page. Just type in the words Tone and Tenor in our Facebook search engine to find us.
My name is Archie Williams.
Right, let's get to know you first of all, Archie, a little bit.
Okay. I was just incarcerated for 37 years for somebody else's crime.
Ooh.
DNA freed me. On the morning of December the 9th of 1982, a 30-year-old white woman was raped and stabbed in her home. I was arrested on January the 4th. I couldn't believe it was really happening. I knew I was innocent. I didn't commit a crime. But being a poor black kid, I didn't have the economic ability to fight the state of Louisiana. I was sentenced to life in 80 years. Without the possibility of parole or probation. When you know you're faced with dark times, what I would do is I would pray and sing. This is how I got peace.
I can't light no more of your darkness. All my pictures seem to fade to black and white. I'm going tired and time stands still before me. Frozen here
days of my life. Don't let the sun go down on me. Although I search myself, it's always someone else I see. I'm just another fraction of your the sun going down on me. The sun going down on me.
Our topic today is criminal just us system. Reclaiming freedom from incarceration. Joining us in the studio today is Akhenaton Mikel, also known as Khan. That's what we call him. And we're going to have a frank discussion about wrongful incarceration and some of the cases, especially one that he's affiliated with, a relative of misincarceration. And as you heard, Archie Williams, and this was in Louisiana. So this is not just happening here in Philadelphia in the state of Pennsylvania. It's happening all over these United States where folks have been wrongfully incarcerated, and then they have to fight to try to get out and try to change the system that is a just us system. And you know, somebody's saying, wait a minute, it's not just us. But if you go to the Innocence Project and you look it up, you will see that black people, that most of the folks that are incarcerated, the cases of black people exonerated for murder convictions are 50% more likely to involve police misconduct than those of white people exonerated for murder convictions. You know, intentionally suggestive witness identification occurs twice as frequently in the cases of black and Latinx. So when we think about this, we're looking at what's going on in these United States. 44% of the 95 convictions integrity units in the United States have recorded exonerations, 44%. So we've got a lot of people that have been incarcerated. And, it's, you know, people may not want to hear this, but Philadelphia leads the pack of people that have been wrongfully incarcerated and they're trying to get out. But the system, the just us, not the justice system, is causing and make it harder for someone to get out. You know, we could even look at the case of the brothers that killed their family, you know, and how they spent over in California, and how they spent all of their, because they were abused, and they are up for another trial, trying to get out and not spend the rest of their lives in jail for a murder of their parents that, you know, I'm not justifying it, but, you know, there was circumstances. And see, there's circumstances in these cases. So kind of, let's talk about the case that involves your cousin?
My nephew.
Damien Mikel, here in Philadelphia. Walk us through what's going on, what's happening, how it started, and where we stand today, and what needs to be done.
Okay, first and foremost, I'd like to thank you for having me on this platform, so we appreciate that. And getting right to it, and this is a great introduction to Mr. Jefferson. My name is Akhenaton Mikel, and affectionately known as Khan. Today we're here to talk about my nephew, Damien Mikel. He's my nephew, and he was wrongfully incarcerated over 28 years ago. So to get right to the point, back in June of 1996, an unfortunate individual lost his life. And some of the facts of the case are this. There were over 30-something witnesses on the scene the night of the incident. The problem is that there was only one eyewitness that implicated Damien, just one, despite the fact that there were over 30 witnesses on the scene. So an individual unfortunately lost his life, and this person that implicated Damien said that he saw a guy by the name of Fatty, pass a gun to another individual that I'll identify as KC. And then that he saw KC pass said gun to another individual by the identification of MC. And subsequently, MC shot and killed this individual we're referring to. Now, what makes this so tragic is that this individual, this one eyewitness, he already made it known that he had known KC and MC, the two other co-defendants in said case. He made it known that he knew them from the neighborhood, but he did not know my nephew Damien, which is why he identified him as seeing some guy they call Fatty pass a gun to KC. So what happens is he goes down to the police station or goes down to 8th and Race, which is police headquarters. He makes this statement, and then subsequently he comes back or goes back down to the police state headquarters 4 days later after the incident. And suddenly he knows my nephew's first name after being shown a photo of an array of individuals. And he was asked the question, you know, does he identify or does he recognize anyone? And his answer was, yes, that's Fatty. His name is Damien. So that struck us kind of odd as well because he didn't know his name before. But as a result of him making the statement, his name is Damien, and he's the one I saw pass the gun to KC, the arrest warrant, affidavit for an arrest warrant was then drawn up, and subsequently an arrest warrant went out for his arrest, and later on he was arrested and locked up and, you know, charged with the crime of murder. Mm. And so let's break this down. So then after this occurs, like I said, this occurs on June 16th, 1996. 4 days later, he goes back down to police station or police headquarters. So that would be June 20th. And then less than 30 days later, they have their preliminary hearing. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we all know that preliminary hearings are just that. They're preliminary
hearings.
Right, to see what's going on, see what they have, you know, see if they can move forward with anything or what have you with the case. So as it pertains to Damien, this one lone eyewitness, okay, when asked on direct examination by the prosecution if he had seen Damien pass a gun to KC, his answer was no. And this is by the prosecution. His answer was no. Okay? So, of course, you know, there was a series of other questions that took place, so forth and so on, throughout the preliminary hearing. And then when it came time to cross-examine him, Damien's attorney got on, got to cross-examine him and asked the same lone eyewitness, do you know what Damien handed to KC? Once again, his answer was no. So you have at least on two occasions that at the preliminary hearing, when asked if he knew or if he saw, you know, what was passed to KC, if anything, he says no. So subsequently, they moved forward and he was, you know, he was given a bail. He was bailed out. But when it was time to go to trial, he went to trial, and he was found guilty along with the other two co-defendants. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I think is noteworthy is the fact that he was definitely it's a fact that he was not the shooter. You know, he may have been out there just like the other 30-something people that were out there, because this was in West Philadelphia, on the corner 60th and Arch. Okay, so people are out there, you know. He just happened to get fingered and get named. So as a result of him getting convicted, you know, he went through the legal process of filing, you know, appeals and various subsequent paperwork. You know, he filed his post-sentence motions through his attorney. And within those post-sentence motions, he filed a clan which is referred to as a weight clan. Okay, but we can get back to that at a later time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so moving right forward, Damon has always maintained his innocence about this. This is for over 28 years, you know. And if you stop and think about it, you got one eyewitness that gave contradictory statements, okay? The night of the incident, he says he sees some guy they call Fatty pass this gun to KC, and KC passes the MC. He goes back to police station 4 days later and he says, oh, now I know this guy's name. His name is Damien. And he says the same thing. But then at the preliminary hearing, when asked on direct and cross-examination, he says no. So, I mean, that's something that's really questionable right there, because when the lone eyewitness says, no, I did not see him pass a gun when asked, not once, but at least twice, and he's still convicted, this is a major problem.
You know, Khan, and you're absolutely right. You know, your nephew has been incarcerated for almost 20 some odd years. 28. But here in Philadelphia, if we look at the wrongful convictions that are, they're averaging 2 decades or more, and we're actually paying out, the city of Philadelphia is paying out for these wrongful convictions millions of dollars. And Philadelphia has paid out millions of dollars in civil settlements for wrongful convictions, including in 23, $9.1 million to Walter Agra in 2023. The city has also paid out millions of dollars in civil suits claims, including claims that related to police misconduct. Now, to shed a light on this to our listeners and across this country is that, you know, Philadelphia has been known to, back then, to actually profile black men. They use excessive force. This was the Philadelphia Police Department. And anybody want to challenge me, you know, you can go look it up. You know, I'm not beating up on the Philadelphia Police. We've come a long way. But there are folks that are sitting in prisons all across this country that look like you and me, black males, and that are sitting there that, as Archie Williams said, he spent 37 years of his life. But there was nothing called DNA then, or was just coming into fruition so that he could be exonerated. You know, we can talk about money. You know, we could talk about all of these payouts, $9.1 million, $4.1 million, and just recently another gentleman by name of Raheem Collins, after spending 19 years, was exonerated. And he sued the city of Philadelphia. He sued the city of Philadelphia. You know, and you can look this all up on the National Registry.
If this is the same case that I'm thinking about, this guy was also, much like in Damien's case, just implicated. His name was just put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was implicated by someone that had a number of other felony cases that they were facing.
Absolutely. And these the convictions of 49 people have been overturned. I mean, since DA Larry Krasner has come into, and for our listeners, DA Larry Krasner is now the prosecutor, but before that, he was a defense attorney. So he worked on cases that, you know, that had some problems. And a lot of people say, wait a minute, you're a prosecutor and not a defense attorney. You know, but if you have somebody convicted wrongly or prosecuted wrongly, it is moral. You have a moral obligation, a legal obligation to try to right the wrong.
Absolutely.
But no money. Let me hear what I'm saying. No amount of money will give back the time you lost with family, the time you lost through the new coming age of technology. And think about it. Some folks' loved ones have passed.
Absolutely.
Mothers, fathers, daughters, you know, have passed, and they did not have the opportunity to attend those services. And when we think about this, $60 million is taxpayer money. At the end of 2024, it was presumed to be about $60 million that the city of Philadelphia, so you think about city of Philadelphia, the fourth largest city in these United States, paying $60 million. What about everybody else? What about Los Angeles? What about New York? What about Miami? What about all of these San Francisco? But I'm going to hold that thought. We're going to come back to Damien, but we're going to take our first break. You're listening to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5. In the studio with me today is Con McKell. He's talking about his nephew who is incarcerated and may be incarcerated wrongly. Welcome back to Tony Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5 HD2. I'm Randall Jefferson, your host. In the studio with me is Con McKell. We're talking about his nephew, Damien McKell, who is not in a rare situation because this is happening all over these United States where black males or people of color are being incarcerated, that some should not be there, but due to the just us system or the justice system, whichever one you want to talk about, they're fighting to reclaim their freedom from incarceration. And, you know, Con, your nephew, you know, like the gentleman said, the only way he made it through, he did not let his music. He prayed every day and he sung. How is your nephew? I know he's probably doing his own research, trying to talk with his lawyers, how is he coping with this after being in jail, incarcerated for 28 years, you know, and what's next for him? What is he going to do?
Well, to answer your question in terms of how he's coping. In fact, I spoke with him the other day, and he's enjoying this yoga class that he's in. But moving forward, I mean, the thing is, what we want to really focus on, and I'll answer your question, is that you have to realize after he was convicted, he was trying to have this injustice that occurred to him heard through the courts. And for over 28 years, he was trying to get back into the courts so that his situation could actually be heard, you know, and so that it could be corrected. But the thing that needs to really be known is that, one, he's always maintained his innocence of this crime. And that, you know, the facts are that you had one lone eyewitness that gave contradictory statements, okay? And then, of course, in the preliminary hearing, when asked, he said, no, I didn't see him. You know, so that case toward him should have been discharged after that point. But it wasn't. OK. And then subsequently, one of the other things that we need to actually notice or take note of is that his trial judge, the one that's seen and heard all of the evidence that came into the case, is quoted as saying that, you know, she was troubled, however, by whether or not the evidence in the case was truly sufficient to find.
Now, this was the judge.
This is the judge that saw all of the evidence in his case, that presided in his case.
Mm.
She said, and I quote, "This court is troubled, however, by whether the evidence in this case is truly sufficient to find defendants Casey and Damien McKell guilty of first-degree murder." These were her words, okay? And then subsequently later on, she also stated that, and I quote, "I agree with you. Mikkel, to me, there's a lot of injustice. There was a lot of injustice, except as to the shooter." So that's the judge that actually presided in the case. These are her words. I'm not making this up. You can go and actually fact check this. So when you have a lone eyewitness that gave contradictory statements, okay, and then you have a judge that makes these two quotes or says these two quotes specifically, okay, that's saying, without saying, that these guys got done wrong. They got done dirty, you know. So the issue now, back to your question, is what is he doing, you know, moving forward? One, he's trying to get this corrected. He's in a better position than he's been in for over the past 28 years. Because fortunately enough, the culture of the district attorney's office and their conscience has changed drastically, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we want to actually give the current district attorney's administration a lot of credit for that. And so what we're trying to do is actually build on where he is now, which is, as I was about to say, he's in court currently. In fact, if I could take you back just a tad bit, he has the fortunate circumstances of being in front of what I believe is a very fair judge, Judge Scott DiClaudio. And he had a hearing in front of Scott DiClaudio, the Honorable Scott DiClaudio, back in November 8th of 2023, whereby the judge himself also acknowledged in his way that he understood something, you know, and these are my words, wacky or crazy, went on with his case. Mm-hmm. So as a result, what he did was he set up a situation where as though he ordered Damien's current attorney and the ADA, Paul George, that's handling this case, to actually come together and work out a resolution to actually, you know, free Damien. You know, he didn't say what that resolution should be, but he said that, you know, he's ordering them to work that resolution out. So we're trying to actually get that situation taken care of. Mm-hmm. What we do not want is for Damien to have to plead to a lesser degree, like someone recently did, like in Tyreek Wallace's case. We don't want him to have to plead to a lesser degree just to gain his freedom when there's evidence available that shows and points that he's innocent.
Let me just read something to our listeners and to you. African Americans are burdened by a presumption of guilt that most defense attorneys are not prepared to overcome. As a result, African Americans make up 47% of exonerations, even though they are only 13% of the population. Mm. Innocent black people are about 7 times more likely to be convicted of murder than innocent white people. And black people who are convicted of murder are about 50% more likely to be innocent than non-black people convicted of murder.
Boy.
That's fact. That's not fiction.
Right.
You know, and this is the systems that we have to live with and deal with on a daily basis. But according to the National Registry, roughly 3,500 exonerations have taken place in these United States since 1989. Listen closely, people, with 77 exonerations in Philadelphia since records began being kept in 1990. 47 of those have taken place since Krasner took office in 2018. One of the more recent cases, and this is old, C.J. Rice, made national headlines after all charges against Rice for a 2011 shooting were dropped, and he was able to walk free after serving 12 years for a wrongful conviction. Rice's 2013 conviction was reexamined by the district attorney's office. This leads to what Khan has been saying, that he's hoping that the defense attorney and the district attorney's office will come together and reexamine his nephew's case, a move that's becoming more common as CJUs come online in localities and states across the country. So this is not, as I said earlier in the beginning of this show, this is not just exclusive to Philadelphia.
We have folks sitting in prison. And don't get me wrong, there's some that belong there.
Absolutely.
There's
Absolutely.
Some that belong there. But then there's others that are not. And if you think about it, even before Larry Krasner came in the office, the CIU, the Conviction Integrity Unit, was established by his predecessor, Seth Williams, but was more of a ceremonial performance in practice. So, and I'm not saying that Seth didn't do anything, District Attorney Seth Williams, but you see a lot of things go on in our cities where the powers that be, or those that have the power, mm-hmm. most of the time I call them the glad handlers, the photo operators, ceremonies. You know, you've got to roll up your sleeves and get down and dirty.
Yeah, you
got
to pull them on the carpet.
You know, and I know a lot of folks listen to this show, and I know a lot of folks, you know, Randall. But I will not say anything on this show that cannot be proven, unsubstantiated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's facts, not fiction here. Absolutely. This is not 30 seconds of fluff. You know, we just, when we think about this, yesterday you held a service for the 39th president of these United States, Jimmy Carter. And you know, throughout that service, they talked about him, and they talked about justice, and it talked about overcoming what black folks and males and females had to overcome, and his role in it to overcome some of this misjustice in the South, especially in Georgia, where in his case, Plains, Georgia, he was in the minority.
Mm.
He was in the minority. You know, he was in the minority, but he was able to bring the minority. And what I liked, when he went to the Naval Academy, he asked for the first black shipman to, he asked that he be his roommate. And he said, they asked him why. He said, I know what it's like being a minority.
Mm.
Think about this. You know, but we're not a minority when it comes to incarceration.
No, not at all.
You know, we're not. And there are some things that, you know, the old saying, snitches get stitches, you know, and all of this. But if your police department, your local police departments do not follow through, or they drop the ball in investigation so that they can get their stats up. And I don't care what anybody says. The stats for Philadelphia last year, murders was off. I don't care. But when you're trying to build and you want to be a national prominence, and you got all these things coming, you want to keep those numbers low.
Right.
You know, as an accountant, I know about numbers.
Okay.
You can do what you want to do with numbers.
Right. Right.
You know, we'll just put these over here till after we get what we need. You know, but we have to really look at what goes on when a person, from the time they are arrested to the time they go to the preliminary trial, and if you look at it, you go and look at some of this, there are continuance after continuance. The DA may not be prepared. The defense may not be prepared. Or the person that, you know, he gets assigned or she gets assigned a pro bono lawyer.
Court appointed
lawyer. Mm-hmm. And that lawyer is not up to snuff, you know, but he's getting a paycheck or she's getting a paycheck. And that comes from city money. That comes, all of this stuff comes from a majority of city money. Once these cases are settled or folks are exonerated and money is paid out, it comes from city money. Why? Because the state of Pennsylvania, think about this, ladies and gentlemen, The state of Pennsylvania has no mechanism. Pennsylvania does not have a law that compensates wrongfully convicted people. Mm. However, House Bill 1470 is a bill that would provide compensation for wrongful conviction in Pennsylvania. But let's think about it, Con. If we're talking about 50% of black folks,
right?
I mean, you think that bill is going to have pass?
If so, it's not. If so, I'll preface it with that. If it passes, it's not going to pass without a lot of obstacles being put in the way. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to say like this. If you stop and think about it, to all of the listeners out there, anything that's lost can be found again except time.
Absolutely.
If I lose money, I could walk down the street and find a dollar. If I lose a watch.
I found one this morning.
Did you?
Okay. Absolutely. I was walking down the street. I found a dollar.
Let me hold something. Let me hold something. But no.
No, yeah, I did.
So, okay. So but that's my point, though. Anything that's lost can be found again except time. I lose money, I can find money. I lose a watch, I can buy a watch. You lose time, you can't get that back. So what happens when people actually lose time from being wrongfully incarcerated and then the system, you know, realizes with the evidence that is presented that, yay, this person is innocent, but then does not want to take accountability? That's a problem.
Well, see, that's one of the biggest problems that we have in the three branches of government is a lack of accountability. You know, and the other thing, we have this acronym here that we use. It's called TRAC, Transparency, Responsibility, Accountability, Confidence, mm-hmm. and Knowledge. Mm. So if you don't have that transparency or you don't have that accountability, we're going to go through years and years and decades of people that are sitting in 6x6, I guess it's still 6x6, cells, and they're being told, you know, a lot of people make jokes about it. Oh, you know, they're going to get three squares and a cot, and they get free health care, and they can go to school and all of that. But if I'm sitting there in a place knowing that I am not.
Right.
I am not. That doesn't mean anything because I'm sitting there. I can only talk to my cousin on the phone mm-hmm. when they call and they keep beeping, this is so-and-so CJ Correction Facility, bomb. This is it. You know, you're trying to have a conversation.
Right.
Your loved ones, you are monitored. You're incarcerated while being incarcerated.
Yes, indeed. You know, because the family is incarcerated. The loved ones are incarcerated, you know? And the thing about it is if you really stop and think about it, most people don't think about this unless it affects them directly, okay? So let's stop and think about it. Damien has been incarcerated for 28 years, and he's innocent. Evidence shows that he's innocent, okay? Evidence shows that he's innocent. You know, we have quotes from the judge that watched all of the evidence coming in out the trial that said what she said, okay? This stuff is not made up. You can check it.
You know, and folks, I'm sitting here with the court documents right here in my hand. You know, I have them in my hand and with the notes and all of that. So it wasn't, we're not just doing this to be doing it because, and with all disclaimer, Con is a friend of mine. You know, we're not doing this. We're doing it for Damien. We're doing it for all the Damiens mm-hmm. across this country.
Right.
You know, not just here in Philadelphia, because there are so many. And we read the statistics. It is time for these folks to get off of their behinds and they start looking into that third branch of government. And if you want to call it the justice system, then make it a justice system for everyone.
For everyone. You
everyone.
Know, because I also wanted to just make a note that in many cases, the person's crime, honestly speaking, is that they were destitute.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these same crimes, if it was from a person of affluence, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
We already said that.
Yeah.
We already said that. In the statistics, we talked about the difference.
And that's the data. And they're facts.
Yeah, we talked to her. We're going to take our second and final break. You're listening to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5 HD2.
The sun. Atoms in the air. Organisms in the sea. Sun and yes, man. Are made of the same things.
Welcome back to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5 HD2. Our topic today is Criminal Just Us System, Reclaiming Freedom from Incarceration. As you heard from Pharrell Williams, freedom, freedom. You know, are we all free? Or when a black male walks down the street, is he free? Is he, if he's in the room and something goes on, will he be the next Damien, Mikel? Will he or she, if that matters in that case, be the next? And then have to go through a long, drawn-out justice system to reclaim their freedom, and then cannot reclaim the time, as Khan said, that was lost. I'm going to kick this back to Khan because there are things that we, or he, wants to ask our listeners, not just here in the city of Philadelphia, but those of you around the country. He wants to ask He has some ask for you.
Okay, here we go. For those that are listening, first and foremost, if you wanted to look at his case, I'm going to give you the information. It's CP51CR0712152-1996. Okay? And so what I wanted to really convey is that this is a pivotal moment. And shining a light on Damien's case could not only help him, but also raise awareness of broader issues affecting others in similar situations. You know, much like recently publicized cases of Tyree Wallace and most recently Raheem Collins that Randall spoke of. There are so many of these types of cases that fall on deaf ears, and without the public's awareness regarding holding this system accountable when they are wrong, these injustices, they're going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So Damien is now appealing to the public with the hopes that after the readers and listeners of this show garner more public attention and support in his case by asking them to contact Philadelphia's District Attorney Larry Krasner at 215-686-8000 and asked that his request for a recommendation for exoneration be supported. Please, we're asking that his, in other words, we're asking for Larry Krasner's recommendation for exoneration because of his overwhelming evidence of his innocence. Okay? We don't want Damien to have to plead to a lesser degree just to come home. Because when that's offered, that's not justice.
No, that's not. And, you know, and that seems to be, you know, a breaking point, kind that folks have spent so many times and so many years away from their family and so much time away from their families and being incarcerated that the system feels as though that if we offer the lesser and quote unquote time served, that someone will jump at that so that they could be free. But they're not free because the only
free to
thing
do what?
Is you're still have that conviction hanging over your head. You know, think about this. Even the highest office in the land today was convicted. He was convicted, but he did not get any sentencing or what. But his felony will still, when he takes office, be hanging over his head. Think about it. But he was not exempt. But this is where Khan made reference to if you have the means or you have the power.
This kind of stuff doesn't happen to you.
It won't happen to you. It won't happen to you. You know, and you have to really, really dig down deep, ladies and gentlemen, and you have to think about this. You know, and we're not just, it's not just black folks. It's not just people of color. But the majority of the folks that are wrongfully incarcerated, that's why we're talking about it. That's why we're talking about it.
Absolutely.
Look of people of color. And it's not enough. And there's not enough advocacy out there so that it will go from just us to true justice. And again, there are folks that out there that commit a crime. There are folks that are out there that are lifetime criminals. There are folks out there that deserve to be in jail.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, but they, if you did the crime and you got to do the time. But if you didn't do the crime and you're doing the time, then there should be mechanisms out there to help you to be exonerated.
Absolutely.
You know, you should not have to beg, borrow, and steal, so to speak, to get your voice heard. And it's harder. This is not the first show we've done on someone that has been incarcerated. We've done a show with Senator Haywood and another individual that the individual actually called us from prison. And his sister was in the studio. But it's okay to have these people in power, but if you don't have the people that actually, and I say this, the justices, the judges are the ones that enforce the laws that are done by the legislative bodies of every state mm-hmm. in these United States, from municipal courts to the Commonwealth to Superior Court to Supreme Court.
Right.
So, you know, we have to understand these mechanisms as a people, as constituency, and we have to, you know, the hell with a damn arena and worrying about Wanamaker's closing or Macy's closing and all this better for downtown. What about the folks that will never get to see downtown?
Right.
That should be out there to be able to see downtown. Or to walk past the arena because your dad gone showing if you look like me and you, going forward to take your whole family in into a game.
Nah.
So this is what we need to really begin to focus on. You know, there are not that many folks. You know, Khan could, this is his nephew. This is 28 years he's been dealing with this, him and his family.
Well, actually, I have two nephews that are dealing with this. It's just that Damien's is right before us. But I have a William Mike Hill as well. He's been in for like 33 years for a crime he didn't commit, for witnesses they've kept away from testifying 33 years ago because it would have pointed to his innocence. So I just wanted to focus on Damien's today. But we have a William Mike Hill as well. Same situation in that, you know, a witness was made to lie, forced to lie, and then came back and told his family members, you know, I was made to lie, or they said they were going to give me the case. No physical evidence, nothing that linked him to it. You know, and the same person, in his case, was granted immunity for his testimony. So see, what we're looking at is a history in the past of the district attorney's office valuing convictions over the truth, which is why I'm glad we have this administration that we have now.
Mm. You know, just some other examples. Wrongful convictions settlements in Philadelphia. Jimmy Dennis spent 25 years in prison for murder of a high school girl. Federal judge overturned his sentence in 2013. Jury awarded $16 million. James Kelly spent 30 years in prison for a murder he did not commit. He was exonerated by the CIU in July of 2024 and released from prison. He is suing the city for compensation and to bring attention to alleged police misconduct. You know, the money's fine, but misconduct is more important. You know,
that's a bigger crime. You have those that we're putting our trust in committing the crimes.
And they're supposed to be the one to protect and serve.
Absolutely.
That's what's on the shield.
That's what's on the shield.
William Franklin spent 44 years in prison. 44 years. Raheem Collins, who we talked about earlier, 19 years. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And these folks, once they come out after all of these, think about the errors that they have missed, the technology errors, all of the changes that they have to come out and then recondition themselves.
Reacclimate themselves, yeah. Become acclimated.
Right, and be acclimated. And then meet family members that they never knew, or never met, rather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then realize those that gone on to glory.
Mm.
You know, these are the things that Khan referenced earlier, you can't get back.
No, you can't.
Money doesn't buy it. You know, they think that you wave some money in front of a person, yeah, that helps. But that doesn't give you the time.
It doesn't give you the time. And I just also wanted to mention, you don't, everyone that's in the position that Damien Mike Hill and William Mike Hill, the positions that they are in, because both of them are my nephews, everyone doesn't have someone on the outside advocating the way we are. They don't. So imagine what they have to deal with, you know? And so what I wanted to just kind of make certain that our listeners are aware of are these points here, these two main points, that he's innocent of the crime and he has overwhelming evidence that supports it, and he's asking for the public's support in contacting District Attorney Larry Krasner's office and demand that he not have to plead guilty to a lesser degree in order to come home, but much rather make a recommendation for his exoneration by calling 215-686-8000.
And with us closing out, I just want to give these last statistics. Exoneration since 1989, according to the National Registry of Exonerations, 375. People exonerated through DNA evidence since 1989, 27,200 plus. Years exonerated people spent in prison for crimes they did not commit, 44%. Only 44% of the 95 convictions integrity units in the United States have recorded exonerations, and nearly 60% of the people that the Innocent Projects has helped to free or exonerate since 1992 are Black.
Mm.
With that said, you know, we're going to thank Khan Mikhail for being a guest to talk about his nephew, Damien Mikhail. You know, listeners, we want to thank our engineer for the day, Eric. Thank you. We want to thank everyone here that helps to make this show happen. And as we close out, remember, listeners, you can follow us on social media. On X, we are at Tone and Tenor. On Instagram, we are at Tone and Tenor Radio. To find us on Facebook, just type in the words www.facebook.com/ToneTenor to find our page. And as Andrea Day says in this last song as we go off the air, stand up for something. Because if you don't stand up for something, it doesn't mean nothing. Thank you for listening to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5 HD2. Thank you all.